This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Saltro Fungicide Seed Treatment from Syngenta for consistently superior sudden death syndrome protection without the stress.
You will not believe what we've got lined up for you today. It is the AgriTalk U.S. Farm Report College Roadshow from Purdue University, and we're talking with the corn guy, Bob Nielsen, and then we've got a fantastic lineup of Purdue economists ready to go for the Roadshow Roundtable.
Live from West Lafayette, Indiana, the campus of Purdue University, this is AgriTalk. As we said, it's the College Roadshow. We'll start talking corn with Purdue's Bob Nielsen and weather outlook with our own Mike Hoffman.
Yes.
And then, can you believe this? It's the holy trinity of ag econ. Jim Minter, Jason Lusk, and Michael Langmeyer. Holy cow.
Oh.
And, of course, Oliver Slope's going to check in as he does every Thursday.
I'm not worthy.
You are not worthy, my friend. Oliver Slope's going to be in with the field from the floor and his crucial pick for this weekend's game against the Gophers. So now, boiler up with your host, Chip Flory.
Thank you so much, John Harris. What a wonderful day here on the campus of Purdue University. The College Roadshow is back. Thank you so much to DeKalb and Asgrow. The 2019 AgriTalk College Roadshow from Purdue University is brought to you by the Champions of Yield, Asgrow, and the Roundup Ready Extend Crop System. Talk to your dealer to score the next W for your operation. Kind of a mixed day in the markets today. Corn was under some pressure. Soybeans, they were trying to trade higher earlier, kind of backed off into the close. Wheat, winter wheat futures that had been under pressure finally came back and closed higher, while spring wheat futures that had been trying to work to the upside, or very successfully been working to the upside, were under a little bit of pressure today. And then mixed trade in the livestock markets. The markets are trying to digest just so much right now with everything that is happening. We've got the impeachment issues. We've got what does that mean for USMCA. We've got the Japan deal. We've got all kinds of irons in the fire once again for the Trump administration. Second half of the show, we're going to talk about all that stuff and what it might mean for us today, tomorrow, and maybe 6 months down the road. For the ag markets. We've got that great lineup coming your way. Jason Lusk, James Mintert, and Michael Longemeyer from the Ag Econ Department. Okay, before Oliver gets on the line, let's go. He had a you do realize he had a terrible pick last week,
yes,
right?
He did.
But we don't care. We can forgive a mistake made even a week ago and look forward to the pick that we're going to get from him this week.
We can. As long as he picks correctly.
Hashtag stand with Carson. Let's go.
All right. Well, wheat export sales in the week ending September 19th totaled just over 283,000 metric tons. That was at the low end of trade expectations. Support for winter wheat futures was likely drawn from the profit-taking on long spring short winter wheat spreads. Yep. Traders continue to monitor the rainfall in U.S. and Canadian prairies where soggy conditions are delaying the final stages of harvest. December hard red futures were 4.25 cents higher at 4.08 1/4. December soft red futures jumped 7 cents to 44 1/4. Meanwhile, December spring wheat fell 5 3/4 cents to 5.48 1/2. So a little bit back towards reality there.
Well, and I think there's a little bit of a buy the rumor, sell the fact going on in spring wheat because Egypt bought a cargo is what I'm starting to pick up. Egypt bought a cargo of U.S. spring wheat. So that may have been part of the last, 15 cents. In that spring wheat move to the upside. Now that we're starting to get confirmation of it, the market backs off a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, corn export sales on the week ending September 19th totaled 494. Oh, that almost made a big mistake there. 494,000 metric tons, down sharply from the previous week and well below even the lowest pre-report trade guess. Ethanol production last week fell 60,000 barrels a day from the previous week as ethanol producers continue to battle razor-thin production margins. Those demand-side factors weighed on corn prices today, but losses were limited by concern over a soggy harvest season and a potential end of the growing season in the upper Midwest sometime next week. December corn futures 1 3/4 cents lower at 372 1/2. March corn down 0.75 cents at 384 3/4. May corn closed at 392 1/4. That was down 0.75 cents.
The ethanol side of things here, John. Oh, my
that
goodness.
Hurts.
Yeah. And we were another, gosh, we're almost 100 100,000 barrels per day below where we were a year ago. We're not quite there, but it's probably 96, I guess. 94. 94,000 barrels below where we were a year ago on production. That's a.
And it's been what, since 2012 since we were this low on production?
Yeah. It's taken a big bite out of the domestic demand for corn right now.
Indeed. On the week ending September 19th, U.S. exporters sold 1.038 million metric tons of soybeans. Of that total, 391,000 tons were earmarked for China. USDA this morning also announced a daily export sale of 257,000 metric tons of U.S. beans for delivery to China in the current marketing year. So far this week, that's nearly 840,000 metric tons of beans sold to China to go along with the 720,000 tons purchased last week. The momentum behind the Chinese demand has traders looking for more sales in the days ahead. November bean futures were 0.75 cents lower at 888 and a half. January beans slipped a half cent to 902 and 3 quarters. March beans closed at 915, steady on the day.
There's more sales coming. I don't know if they're going to happen this week. I don't even know if they're going to happen next week. But China's going to make some more purchases, and they're getting things lined up. I don't know if it's going to get all the way to 5 million metric tons, but there's a pretty aggressive book coming between now and
October 7th.
I'd call it even October 20th, October 22 even. There's some boats booked out that far.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, China has learned that those purchases soften up President Trump a little bit.
Yes, that's right.
All right. Feeder cattle futures were supported by the light pressure on corn prices. Live cattle futures traded in a fairly narrow range for most of the session. Export sales of more than 19,000 metric tons in the week ending September 19th helped to pull prices to the plus side of unchanged. October cattle were a nickel lower at 102.95. December cattle futures gained 25 cents to 108.75. October feeders were 65 cents higher at 143.10. Pork export sales in the latest reporting period jumped to 32,000 metric tons, but lean hog traders were disappointed that China buys accounted for only 3,400 tons of those sales. Mexico easily topped the list of buyers at more than 13,000 metric tons in the week. October hogs were 35 cents lower at 64.22.5. December hogs slipped 102.5 to close at 70.37.5.
All right, thank you very much, John. Let's bring in Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Oliver, how you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I'm getting along. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. We had a really nice week of pork sales, yet the market was kind of disappointed that China wasn't in to buy more. But from a technical perspective, how is that hog market looking?
Choppy, bipolar, okay. Erratic. I mean, we bumped up against resistance. We got up to 71.57.5, I think, just shy of the September 16th high, 71.60. And we've got a big report around the corner, and if we're able to get a halfway friendly report, I think we can get the market out above there. And if we do, I think we could really retrace a lot of the losses from where we really rolled over at the end of July. So if we can take out technical resistance, 71.60 with consecutive closes, I think that opens the door for an additional run towards 80, which is that point I just talked about where we rolled over there late July. So I still think there's an opportunity to the upside. But it has been a choppy market, that's for sure.
Exactly. Give me 10 seconds on this. Are you friendly, the grains, or are they going to be on the defensive?
I'm still very friendly. You know, pullbacks are healthy. We've been a stick in the mud for corn, but I think there's more upward mobility here over the next couple weeks to a couple months.
All right. It's that time. Let's go, Oliver. Let's get the pick. What do you think? We got the Boilermakers in Minnesota this weekend.
Well, last weekend, I let my emotions get the best of me. Not letting that happen this week. I'm taking Purdue, not only getting 1.5 points, I'm saying money line.
Money line. Well, hey, you know, when the ex-girlfriends are involved, I can't blame you for getting emotional last week, okay?
Yeah, it's weird. It gets ugly when they get in the picture.
Thank you, Oliver. Appreciate it so much. We are live with AgriTalk on the College Road Show. From Purdue University. We'll be back in a moment.
Sudden death syndrome causes an estimated annual loss of more than 25 million bushels in the U.S., and since disease pressure can vary from year to year, growers continue to look for the best option to protect against the disease. We're joined today by Dale Ireland, Technical Product Lead at Syngenta, to talk about Sultro fungicide seed treatment. We know Sultro received approval from the EPA this month. How is Sultro different from the other treatment options growers have experienced before?
I've been working on Sultro for the last 5 years in the field across the Midwest. In multiple year data, we have a statistically significant 3-bushel advantage over Olevo with Sultro. Saltro offers stronger FDS as well as parasitic nematode protection compared to the leading competitor. One of the unique benefits that Saltro brings to the U.S. soybean grower is superior FDS protection without the stress that they've come to expect from solutions in the past.
Thanks, Dale. For more information on Saltro, head on over to SyngentaUS.com/Saltro. Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on AgWeb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you are able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarm.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We are live. We are live at Purdue University, the campus here. And I tell you what, it's part of the college road trip, the AgriTalk U.S. Farm Report College Road Trip. The 2019 AgriTalk College Road Show from Purdue University is brought to you by the Champions of Yield, Asgrow, and the Roundup Ready Extend Crop System. Talk to your dealer to score the next W for your operation. I am looking forward to this segment. We've got we've got Bob Nielsen, professor of agronomy here at Purdue University, and it's you're the guy that for the last, I don't know, however long I've known your name, I just call him the corn guy, Bob.
That's what the license plate of my truck says, so yeah, I guess you're right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Very good. And we've got Purdue grad, Mike Hoffman, who is the meteorologist for Ag Day and U.S. Farm Report. Mike, it's good to have you on the show.
Well, it's great to be here and a great sunny day. I can't take credit for it.
Beautiful.
You did well. Right. You did well ordering this one up. Okay, let's start with this corn crop, obviously. Right. 2019, we call it a lot of things. We call it frustrating. We call it interesting, which I've decided means that we don't know what just happened and we don't know what's going to happen is what interesting means. But what are we learning? What are we learning about corn from 2019?
Well, partly that remains to be seen once we start harvesting. But, you know, this came up earlier today when we were having some other discussions that I think there's no question that today's hybrids have better stress tolerance across the board. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it this year. And I think for a lot of people, I think yields will be surprisingly good. There's going to be clearly a lot of disappointments, but I think there will be some fairly nice yields, you know, scattered here and there. Again, I think it's a testament to the genetics. We've seen it in drought years. We've seen it in other challenging years. And I've been doing this, you sort of alluded how long I've been here, and I've been here 37 years. So I've seen the drought of 83, the drought of 88. And when I think about, you know, what yields did in that kind of a year and how they reacted so negatively, and I think about the severe climate events we've had recently, we do not drop off the edge like we would have, say, 20, 30 years ago with those genetics. So
I don't know if you even need to go that far back, do you, Bob? Because you think about that really isolated drought. I think it was 2005 over Illinois. And yields were hurt in that year in Illinois. And you put that kind of stress on a corn crop now with the genetics that we've got out there in the field, it wouldn't be the same thing.
Well, and I think along those lines, what I've been telling folks, and I'll keep telling them this winter at extension programs, you know, as we think about how do we shock-proof these crops, how do we make them more resilient against this climate, one of them is what I would sort of say the simple decision of what hybrid do I grow.
Right.
And I think too often we maybe don't put as much time into evaluating hybrids, not just for their yield potential, but what evidence can we find that they yield pretty darn good most of the time, no matter what kind of where the trial is located. And that's really the only way to assess that kind of stress tolerance is to look for that stability of performance.
Yep.
And I think, you know, climate change is real. It's here. Variable climate, at least, is for real. Mm-hmm. We don't know what next year is going to be for extremes, but it will be extreme. We need hybrids that not only have good genetic potential, but will tolerate what we can't predict.
Yeah. Boy, Mike, the spring really tested farmers' patience, didn't it?
I thought you were talking about the weather when you said we didn't know what just happened and what's coming.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you get into a pattern like that and you don't really know why the pattern started. But once it starts, when you start getting all this moisture in one area, it just evaporates and you get more rain.
Right.
And it's a perpetuation thing. And a drought's the opposite of that. And when you get into patterns like that, sometimes you don't know why it happened. But now you know you're in it.
Right.
Now what's going to happen going forward? And obviously the big question now is how far south does the frost come this week, next week? And that's a big question mark. The models, some have been catching it a little bit. Some have been showing too much cold coming east. And so we're just not sure yet. Who's going to
Well, you're
going to
be okay in South Bend, aren't
we'll
you?
We'll be just fine, yes. And, in fact, most of the Corn Belt's probably okay. It might be the Northwest Fringe.
And being a Purdue alumni, you're at least going to keep it out of Indiana.
Because I can't control it like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. All we got to do is order it up, and it happens.
But, so we're okay in most of the Corn Belt with this. And overall, I would lean toward it being warmer than normal for the central and eastern Corn Belt over the next 30 days. Kind of back and forth the farther northwest you go.
You know, a day like today, Bob, when we were out on crop tour third week of August, we talked about the need for 45 days just like today.
Right.
It's been a mix. They haven't all been this good, but a day like today really helps this corn crop.
Oh, it does, because even though it is – somewhat cool for this time of September, but I think it is still above normal.
Correct? Right, it is.
Yeah,
yes.
And we've had these hot streaks in early September, thank you very much,
because
we needed this above normal temperature to do two things. One, to finish the crop off in terms of maturity.
Right.
And then secondly, once it's mature, we need a lot more above normal temperature, continued above normal temperature to dry it in the field before we get into it, because we don't want to be harvesting 24% corn the whole season.
Right. You know, we're sitting here talking about this Indiana corn crop like, everything's going to be okay. It's not necessarily the case. We got to make that crystal clear.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly. And the next 30 to 45 days are critical.
Yeah.
And I had a I had about a 45, 50-mile drive here today, and I think I saw two cornfields harvested.
Yeah. Yeah, both of them just the other side of Logansport from here.
Yes, they were.
Yeah. I saw them. They were in the field last night when I came down.
But that's among some of the areas of the state that were the most delayed in planting, too.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah, across central Indiana, then on up towards Fort Wayne would probably catch a big share of the truly delayed planting. Yeah. You go south, I was down in southeast Indiana just the other day, and you get down around Columbus on the sandier soils. They got planted a little more timely. There's actually quite a few fields harvested down there. And I think statewide, I forget what the numbers were from USDA, but we're in the teens on percent acres that are harvested. But it's that last three-fourths of the crop is the big question mark. Right.
Absolutely. Okay, Mike was talking about that area of frost, northwest. I know you look at the national crop, Bob. North Dakota, South Dakota, Red River Valley, even down into southern Minnesota, northern Iowa. We are looking at that's the area that could get nipped next week.
I think
week,
it's
right?
a small chance that far south. Farther north, it's a very good chance next week.
What if that happens?
Well, if it's a serious freeze that literally kills the plant.
Right.
Well,
ends the growing season.
That ends it right there. Yeah. And so you're left with whatever yield potential is in the kernels. And what I sometimes remind farmers, and maybe I shouldn't because it's sort of a morbid reminder, but even when we get to that so-called half milk line stage, it's maybe 2 weeks away from black layer, there's still roughly 10 to 12% of the yield left to be put into the grain, even that close to maturity.
Right.
So, yes, there's a tremendous amount of yield potential to be lost if we get these kind of temperatures on corn that's dent stage or maybe beginning milk line.
Yeah.
Now, I do think there won't be too many places go way below freezing.
Okay.
At least next week. So,
if it's a simple frost that doesn't kill the entire plant and maybe only nips the upper canopy, as long as there's any kind of green leaf tissue left, it'll continue to photosynthesize, albeit at a slower rate, but it won't totally shut down.
Okay.
So that's sort of the saving grace with, a simple frost versus a killing lethal freeze of 28 degrees.
Yeah, yeah, no question. Okay, so 168.2, Bob, for a national average corn yield from NASS. You got the over or the under on that?
Do I think it's going to be over or under? Is this what you're asking?
Yes. Chip?
I think it's going to be under.
Okay.
Now, I'm flavored by what I see in Indiana. And, I look nationally, but when I look at Indiana, and in particular when I look at the season-long crop condition ratings that have ranked among the poorest in the last 40 years, that alone would suggest to me at least that we're going to be looking at yields for Indiana that are much less than the current 161.
Gotcha.
Time's going to tell, obviously, and any one of us only see what we see individually as we drive around these states. But I just got to believe that, the kernel numbers are probably not going to be there because I've seen a lot of tick abortion. And then, of course, the big unknown is kernel weight. And that's today's like this are great to help keep pumping dry matter in. But that's going to be the big uncertainty is how strongly do we really finish off grain fill and what's that going to do to kernel weight?
Gotcha. Mike, I've only got about 30 seconds. Tell me about the harvest season.
Well, I would lean over the next 30 days.
Thanksgiving.
That gets a little tougher because I am leaning toward a colder than normal winter, let's say.
Okay.
But leading up to that, the pattern always kind of goes through some fluxes and changes. I would lean toward warmer than normal temperatures, mid to eastern Corn Belt, fluctuating in the northwestern Corn Belt, so they have the bigger risk, obviously, for a frost or freeze.
Gotcha. And we've got some rain coming, don't we?
Yes, we do, and we may have a decent soaker, which we haven't had in a while, in northern Indiana.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that's going to play into the corn crop necessarily, but there's a decent chance over the next 2 days.
Mike, it was good to talk with you. Thank
you.
That is Mike Hoffman. He is the meteorologist for Ag Day and U.S. Farm Report. And, of course, Bob, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's Bob Nielsen, the corn guy, professor of agronomy here at Purdue University.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have Arc County right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrient Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. Private healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910.
It's time for AgriTalk's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Baugh joins us. Dan, what's the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Jeff, I'm looking at November natural gas futures today. The most active November natural gas contract fell from just above $3 per 10 million BTU, so an August 5th low around 213. Subsequent rally was quite vigorous, carrying prices up to the 275 area before running out of steam. Gains after it topped its 40-day moving average around 232 were especially impressive. As such, the size of the recent setback has been pretty surprising, especially today's 7.4-cent dive to 244.40 at the close. Momentum certainly seems to be moving in the bearish favor. The pivotal point will almost surely prove to be the 40-day moving average once again, since it's now spotted at 239.30. Whether NOAA futures bounce or fail at that point will likely set the short-term trend.
All right. So that's an important one to watch coming up on drying season. Thank you, Dan. That is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught. Pro Farmer members, get your daily advice updates, profarmer.com.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Got to boiler up and get on that crazy train for this weekend, right, guys? You betcha, you betcha. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I am Chip Flory. Thank you so much for joining us today. We are on the AgriTalk College Roadshow, and speaking of that, let's go ahead and start this industry spotlight. Talking now with Dave Colbert. He is with DeKalb AgriGrow. We just talked about the corn crop here with Bob. The bean crop. We pushed that corn crop back, which meant, in some cases, we pushed the planting of the bean crop back, too.
Even more, yeah.
Even more. Yeah. How's it doing?
Well, you know, when you have that type of environment, you really don't even start planting beans till mid-June, into July. The problem is you're behind the eight ball right away.
Exactly.
The plant is never going to get as tall, and your yield game with soybeans is always nodes. You got to have the nodes, yep. Then you get pods and flowers, and then pods. Well, when you get a shorter plant, you don't get the nodes. So that's been our number one challenge as we try to get plant height and get those beans still growing, because they just started behind the eight ball just to exactly. begin with, really.
Okay, so I'll give you the same question about beans that I asked Bob. Yep. What are we learning about the bean crop here in 2019?
Well, we've been very fortunate from a disease standpoint, so that's helped us a little bit. We have not seen frog eye, leaf spots, sudden death, white mold. So that keeps the bean plant going from that standpoint. It doesn't have to spend its time fighting off a disease as it's trying to put
right.
on soybeans. Probably our challenge here in the last couple of weeks has been this dry weather.
Isn't that something?
I mean, we went from April, May having 4 or 5 inches above average, yeah. and now we've gone June, July, August, September, and we're 4 or 5 inches below. And bean yield is always driven by, again, number of pods and seeds,
yeah.
but then seed size and density.
Yeah.
And as we hit this dry period, as we finish the crop, we always say a good rain at the end of bean season puts
exactly.
on all that seed, puts on all that dry matter in that way. We may not get it right now. So
yeah.
I'm hoping the weather guy earlier says, hey, we're going to get a soaker. We need some soakers, but those dry pockets of the field are really starting to show up. They're turning quick, and they're moving really too fast. So when they do that, we're losing yield every day.
Yeah, what are you learning about the Asgrow genetics?
Well, every year, obviously, we're looking for varieties that not only have yield but also have disease packages
right.
and really an agronomic yeah. balance, right? We've got to have beans that aren't so specific that they can only work here or only work there.
Right.
They've really got to have a good balance to where growers have fields with 4 or 5 soil types in one field, right?
Yep.
So they got to handle all of that. So that's what we always look for every year in a class of varieties, you know. Do they have yield? Yes.
Yep.
Do they have disease? But can they have that agronomic balance is what we're looking for.
Dave, thank you so much for getting us out here on the road show.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. That is Dave Colbert from DeKalb Asgrow. We've got this Roadshow Roundtable getting ready to go. Let's start over on the far side. We've got Michael Longemeyer. He is an associate director in the Center for Commercial Ag and a professor here in the Department of Ag Econ. Michael, it's good to see you again. All right, and we've got Jim Mintert, the director for the Center of Commercial Ag and a professor in the Department of Ag Econ. Jim, it's good to see you again.
Great to be here.
All right, and Jason Lusk, the head of the Department of Ag Economics here at Purdue University. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks. Good to see you.
Okay, we talked with Bob about the supply side. Michael, I want to start with you on this. We talked with Bob about the supply side on corn. We just heard from Dave on the supply side of beans. There's still a lot of uncertainty that these guys are dealing with out here, and it's not just the Eastern Belt that the uncertainty is at, is it?
Yeah, certainly net returns look like they're going to be lower than what they were in 2018. That's a pretty much a foregone conclusion. But there's going to be a lot of variability among producers,
yeah.
and I think that's the key word here. As Bob was indicating, there's going to be some producers with fairly decent yields. Obviously, their net returns are going to be fairly good.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be some with relatively low yields. You combine that with prices that are much lower than what they were earlier this summer, and you're looking at some pretty tough net returns for some folks.
Yeah, so from the work that you guys are doing, have we figured out how aggressive guys were this spring when they had an opportunity at 430 corn and 1060 beans? Did they still stay pretty conservative with their sales, or did we get some stuff off?
All the reports that we haven't surveyed that directly in the barometer, but
okay.
all the reports we've picked up from the industry suggest there wasn't a lot of selling because
yeah.
there was so much uncertainty about, am I going to get it planted, or if I did get it planted, it was in such tough shape because we'd had too much moisture. So people were very reluctant to make sales. So I think there was very little of the crop forward contracted or priced even using futures.
Yeah, Michael and Jim, it feels like every year is a learning opportunity. But we're going to look back at this 2019 and there are lessons to be taken from it, right, Michael?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, Jim was talking about the pricing. I think also some people might have there might be some lessons related to late planting.
Yeah.
How late is late?
Yeah.
And should have I taken prevent planting? And so there'll be a learning curve related to that, certainly.
Right. Exactly. Jim, your basis product. Tell us about that, because it tracks basis across the – is it just the Eastern Belt or is it the whole belt?
At the moment, it's just the Eastern Corn
right,
Belt. So
right.
we cover basis from Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And we've got data going back roughly 14 years now. So
yeah.
We update every week, so it's a good way to track basis, not only for your region of a given state, but it's also a way to track what's going on elsewhere. Yeah. And, of course, that was fascinating this summer with the swings in basis that we were having, particularly here in Indiana and Ohio. If you look at the parts of the state where we were having trouble getting the crop planted, it's also a part of the state where we have a lot of ethanol demand. Yeah. We also have a lot of livestock. And people got extremely aggressive with those basis bids this summer.
Yeah.
And you could see what was taking place. The industry was trying to come up with a pricing scenario that would pull corn from west to east to satisfy the need for corn to fuel those ethanol plants,
right,
and also the livestock industry.
Now, shouldn't we also take this stronger than normal basis as a clue that maybe, just maybe, there isn't as much corn out there as what we thought there was?
Well, clearly, if you look at what the pattern was this summer, June and early July, especially in northeast Indiana, ethanol firms and livestock producers were extremely concerned, and they were leading some, giving us some really extraordinarily positive basis bids. I mean, some of those basis bids were
so
up over 50
right
cents.
When the planting delays were the worst.
But if you look now, those basis bids have backed off quite a bit. Now, they're still more positive than normal.
Okay.
But I think it's going to hinge a lot on, you know, what we get with this next yield report, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's kind of sitting on the edge of their seat wondering what's going to happen. We were talking to Bob Nielsen before the show started. I think he's going to harvest a plot in southeast Indiana tomorrow.
Okay.
I think people are going to want to know what that plot yields. I know I do. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's going to be that kind of a situation where those little bits of information are going to give us some ideas as to what's taking place. But as Michael indicated, a lot of variability, right?
Yeah.
Just because you hear one farm, that doesn't mean that region of the state is going to be above or below average.
And there's still quite a bit of uncertainty for that region, because if you look at the prevent plant acres that are in that part of the world, it's also northwest Ohio, along with northeast Indiana. And then you look at the yield maps that they provided in the last crop production report. It doesn't look very green out there, indicating pretty high yields. And so I think there's still some uncertainty out there exactly what the supply is going to be in that region. As Jim indicated, there's a lot of demand.
Okay.
In terms of ethanol and livestock production in that region.
Okay, Jason, so help the average farmer here in the state of Indiana understand how we're dealing with all the supply-side uncertainty, all the demand issues that we've got, this basis market doing what it's doing, and turn it into risk management.
Yeah, help the average farmer understand. Partly I tell them to turn into Jim and Michael their weekly webinars as they help me try to understand this stuff. No, it's a tough time, and I think just like Michael was talking about, there'll be a lot of lessons learned this year. Maybe one of those didn't help this year, but maybe one of the lessons is thinking, you know, even sooner about locking in prices, even sooner, whether it's forward contracts, futures, what have you. But you know, the kind of variability we're talking about suggests the need for a lot of different kinds of risk management, and most producers are thinking about that, but it's going to be even more important in the years that go forward.
You know, and what I've been telling guys, when we look back at those opportunities that a lot of them did not take, and hey, I wasn't screaming from the mountaintop, sell it, sell it, sell it either. But when you look back at that, you can't beat yourself up over those sales. That's an opportunity that is gone. You need to take a look at it and decide, okay, now, why didn't I make those sales, and how do I change that for the next time it comes along, right?
I think so. I mean, it's a learning environment, and I think that'll be part of it. I think another, you know, aspect here is I think people will be looking for opportunities to help improve those really low margins that are out there, you know, the next time around, whether it's a special hybrid, you know, that you can get a little higher premium on, whether it's non-GMO, or even, you know, some alternative crops. You know, I think, you know, it's all about hemp these days, right? Or, you know, whatever. But the point is that there's, you know, there's going to be alternatives, and that's part of risk mitigation, is to try to diversify a little bit and look at some different options.
Yeah. You know, Chip, I think the other thing to think about is, admit up front, we can't forecast prices very accurately, and that's really what risk management's all about, right? It's recognizing that. And I think this summer, I think a lot of us, and, you know, you mentioned you fell prey to it, I think I did as well. We had this idea that, well, this crop is really shorter than it is. It's really we're gonna have to see some higher prices. That was probably just putting a little too much faith in our ability to anticipate what prices were going to do. Risk management is about saying, okay, I can't forecast accurately. How do I spread out that risk? How do I spread out those sales? and ensure that I have some sales made at some profitable price levels.
But I do have a piece of paper and a calculator, and I see that I can get a 12% return on how much I'm spending to grow that crop. Maybe I ought to go ahead and take some of that.
Yeah, and I think, truthfully, sitting here today, I hope some people are starting to look at 2020.
Yeah.
If you look at those fall 2020 futures, especially on corn, you look at spring 21 futures for people that have storage opportunities. If we see a return to trend line yields next year, we're going to see a bump in acreage, those prevented planting acres. Most of those are going to come back into production. You can lock in these corn futures is flirting with $4 and a little bit above $4, I think. The spring 2021s are in the 415, yep. 420 range. There's some opportunities
there.
There
is some opportunity out there. Yep, we're going to have to take another look at that when we come back and finish up the Roadshow Roundtable here. We've got quite the lineup. Jason Lusk, James Mintert, and Michael Longemeyer here on the campus of Purdue University.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ad Council, and Make Safe.
More choices, more money. That's the advantage of the new Bayer Plus Rewards. Choose from our broad portfolio of high-performance products. Earn more money on the eligible products that are right for your farm. And best of all, use our new portal to see your purchases, track your rewards, and decide how you want to use them. That's how we're putting more control in your hands. That's the plus. Sign in and earn big with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com to sign up today. See program terms and conditions for full details.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit TryProFarmer.com right now. That's TryProFarmer.com.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Don't worry. Don't worry. He's coming back. It won't be that much longer. He'll be back. Yeah, we hope. We hope. He'll be back behind, what does he call it? The big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk. So, welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We are on the campus of Purdue University, and it is the AgriTalk College Roadshow. We've got the Roadshow Roundtable going. Jason Lusk, James Mintert, and Michael Longemeyer from the Department of Ag Econ here at Purdue University. Jim and Michael, thoughts on acres? Let's just... We had how many prevent plant acres this year?
If you look at one total, it's I think up around 19 million, and I think 14 to 15 million of those were out of the corn soybean side. So
wow,
we're going to see the majority of those acres likely come back into production next year, and I think one of our challenges is to think about what that means for supplies, and as we were talking earlier, I think about what that means for prices.
Yeah. Yeah. So are we thinking most of these acres come back to soybeans, come back to corn, even split? Or how are we going to divvy it up?
That'll probably be a topic for discussion on just about every AgriTalk between now and about April 15th. And it's going to depend on the price ratios, obviously.
Right.
And it's going to depend on what happens with respect to trade with China, et cetera. Yep. So
South American South production. American. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of uncertainty there. But I think, you know, we had, what, 76 million acres roughly of soybeans this year.
Yeah.
We're going to see soybeans bounce back into the 80s for sure.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I would share. And I'm not hoping for low yields. The pro farmer estimate that we've got out there is close to 46 bushels per acre. USDA is still about 2 bushels above that, not quite. But if we could somehow find a way to get our 2019-20 bean carryover down into that, gosh, put a 5 handle on it, into the 500 million bushel area, that would make it a lot easier to absorb that big increase in acres for 2020.
Yeah, I mean, the way I like to look at it is to think of it as the carryover as a percentage of usage. And, you know, we did do some help there this year. We did improve that. We were at 26, 27%. I think most recent projections suggest the carryover may be going to be down around 15, 16%. Right. So that's an improvement. But you and I both know that if you really want to see some explosive activity in the soybean market, we need to get under 10%.
Yeah.
And that doesn't appear likely at all. But, you know, the real solution there is on the demand side. And there's a lot of opportunities there if we could just
And
get
that gets back to the trade issue, trade stuff that you were talking about, Michael.
Yeah, right now the relative probably, if you look at futures prices and trends in yields and trends in costs, the relative profitability between corn and soybeans, remarkably, is quite similar for 2020. Yeah. You know, we had that long period where soybeans were dominant, you know, the last 5 or 6 years before this year. Right now, it's up in the air. They look very similar profitability. So I agree with Jim. I think both soybeans and corn will increase acreage next year.
Yeah, you guys, you know what the answer is. It's that hemp. We got to get that third crop in here to start taking acres away from corn and beans.
Seems unlikely that we would see enough of an impact from hemp
John Harreth knows exactly what my thoughts are on this hemp stuff, and he can't believe that I even said that that's our answer. Okay, you had a big job yesterday, Jason, out in Washington, D.C., testifying to the House Ag Committee. Is that right?
It's a Senate Ag Committee.
Senate Ag Committee. All right. What did you guys talk about? The efficiency of the markets or what?
Well, that was one topic. I mainly hit on some of the big hot button topics facing livestock and poultry. So concentration, there's been some calls to return country of origin labeling that came up. And then animal disease issues, trade, labor issues were some of the hot topics that people touched on.
Yeah, I did see some of your comments. And when every time I read about that animal disease issue, it just freaks me out because we see what's happening in China and Asia in general. And you like to think that, oh, that can't happen here. But the reality is it could.
Well, that's right. I mean, nobody knows for sure, but right. We already see it's getting, you know, it's not contained to China already. It's already spreading a little bit, and it's even spreads more than I think we initially thought it might.
Right.
So, you know, we've ramped up some efforts at the border to try to keep out, you know, products that might be carrying that pathogen. But the risk is real, and, you know, I did, you know, kind of a bit of an analysis and, you know, if we had a similar event here that got, you know, impacted, say, half of our hog herd, which is roughly what happened in China, you know, that's about a $7 or $8 billion loss to producers. So it could be really painful if it hit here.
Yeah. Another part of your testimony that I found fascinating was how much more efficient the livestock industry has become at producing beef, pork, and poultry. Because, what was it, if you go back to 1970 and make no improvements, how many more animals was it?
Yeah, on the cattle side, it was something like 11 million more, just feedlot animals, you would need to, if we wanted to just produce the amount of beef that we actually consumed last year.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really powerful story about sustainability issues.
Yep.
That's 11 million fewer cattle. I think on the hog side, it was something like 30 million market hogs, I believe, about 8 billion chickens.
Yeah.
And so those are all those animals would have, you know, now maybe, you know, if you're wanting corn prices to increase, maybe you want that many more animals to be eating corn. But, you know, at least on the kind of environment side and, you know, sustainability of how we do things, I think it's a really incredible story.
Yeah. Right now, there's a conversation going on in the cattle/beef industry. I think that's being hashed out, what they want to call it, too, about hashtag fair cattle markets.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to learn something from the fire at Tyson out in Kansas. What do you think that might be?
Well, I mean, this is probably going to be frustrating to some of your listeners, but I think, you know, part of what I learned is that economic, you know, forces worked about like we think they do. If you reduce packing capacity, that's going to reduce demand for cattle. We saw cattle prices fall. At the same time, if you want more workers to come in and process, you know, the meat you have, you have to bring them in on Saturdays, pay them more at labor, bring in people to the market that weren't in there before, and that's going to push up prices of wholesale beef. And so that increasing margin, I think, economically, while frustrating, I think, to livestock producers, is exactly what we would expect to see.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And I'm glad that the investigation is happening because I don't want to leave this period without an investigation about into those markets. It'll help clear the air some.
I think providing some transparency. There's some lawsuits going on right now, too, and some of that will get hashed out in legal marketplace as well.
Guys, I hope you had as much fun in this conversation as I did. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet. That's Jason Lusk, Jim Mintert, and Michael Longemeyer here at Purdue University. You got to come back tomorrow. It's a free-for-all tomorrow morning and tomorrow afternoon. Matt Wygant from Futures One on AgriTalk.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home.
Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad.
Thanks to Syngenta, producers of Sultro fungicide seed treatment, for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer today about reserving your supply for 2020. Always read and follow label instructions.